Lions Pride Podcast. This is your twice weekly podcast covering all things Detroit Lions, produced by the fans for the fans. I'm Aaron Sanders, joined as always by my brother Josh, and this is your Week 12 preview. We're going to be breaking down the Tampa Bay game, taking a look at some Lions news, the Lions injury update, and then we're going to give you an updated playoff picture as well as go around maybe a few of the standings around the league, and that'll be it for this one. So short and sweet. So with that, let's get right into it, Josh. What's going on with the Lions?
Well, obviously, coming off the ugly loss,
right?
It's important to note, though, that we're coming into a stretch where the Lions play four of their next five at Ford Field. So if there is a home field advantage to be had, now is the time to prove it.
Absolutely.
They had the letdown that we talked about for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
They've had it. Now they need to get it out of their system, and they need to move forward. This is a game you cannot afford to lose.
No, I mean, the Buccaneers are... What are they, 2-8?
2-8 coming into this game.
Right. This is not a team that you can lose to.
Especially at home. Lions are 3-1 at home this year. They've been playing pretty well. They need to prove that Ford Field is a place that they can win and win the vast majority of their games, if not all. I mean, they have the one loss already, but they can't lose again at home.
No. Not if they want to be a serious playoff contender.
No.
And especially not to a team that's 2-8. Now, given they have had a hot streak the last three games, I think one of the facts that I read about them is they had five picks in the last three games versus six over their previous seven. So they are on kind of a hot streak, but we'll get into that a little bit more as we analyze the game.
Sure.
So what's going on with some of the, Nate Burleson?
Burleson is back at practice. He was a limited participant earlier in the week. He did practice fully on Friday, and he is probable for the game on Sunday. I don't know how well he's going to be physically as far as being in game shape and back to game speed and everything, but he is going to play. It's at least going to be an emotional boost.
Do you see them implementing a limited snap count, only putting him out there for a certain number of snaps?
I think they'll just see how he does. You know, they'll get him out there and see how he's doing, if he's separating from coverage, if he's not getting winded, if he doesn't cramp up. That's one to look for.
Right.
If everything holds up with that, I think that he'll be full go as long as he can handle the workload.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to that a little bit more as how it affects the offensive scheme when we cover a little bit more about the direct impact it may have during the Tampa Bay game. But another interesting piece of Lions news, I know we talked a little bit about this ourselves, the Reggie Bush article that came out.
Yeah. Well, the Lions are coming off a 3-turnover game. Any time that they've been on the losing end of the turnover battle, they've got enough other weaknesses on the team where if they lose in the turnover battle, it's tough going for the Lions. So coming off 3 turnovers, and Reggie Bush he fumbled the one time, but he put the ball on the turf a couple of times, and he has made a solemn vow that he is not going to fumble the ball again this season.
Do you think that was a wise move by Reggie Bush coming out making such a bold statement?
Well, I think that means that other defenders are going to be targeting him. They're going to look to try to get that ball popped out. So hopefully he gets back to the basics, fundamentals, control the points of the football, make sure he secures it, because right now he could lose serious reps to Joik Bell, who's been every bit as effective as Bush has.
Absolutely. Well, he did acknowledge that. He said he knew people were going to be gunning for him, but, I mean, that's their job, so I don't know if this kind of puts a heightened sense of a target on his back. Perhaps, maybe it does. I don't know. I think it might.
When a guy's made a promise like that, like, I will not fumble again, well, I want to be the defender that makes you eat your words.
Fair enough. That is a good point to make. With that, the other interesting thing that I wanted to point out about Reggie Bush was he hasn't had more than 3 lost fumbles in a prior season, or putting 7 fumbles on the ground total in a previous season.
Yeah, he hasn't been a really bad fumble guy. I mean, you know, when you put a couple of them on the turf in a season, that's not great.
Well,
certainly
we've seen that it can affect the outcome of, not necessarily maybe the outcome, but certainly the momentum of a game.
Sure, but I don't think he's a player that's got, you know, fumbleitis, quote-unquote.
No, I mean, everyone's prone to put it on the ground every once in a while, but it's just not something you want to see somebody make a habit of, especially when you've gone out to sign a feature guy that's really supposed to boost that run game.
And when it's in critical games that you have to win.
Absolutely.
Well, I think we should jump into the Lions injury update. Let's talk about a few of the guys that are listed.
Okay.
I'll get your take on this. Well, obviously, Calvin Johnson is still listed for the knee. Wednesday and Thursday, he did not participate. But as of Friday, he had limited participation as listed as probable.
Veteran rest. Same old thing with Calvin.
Is this a thing that you're gonna that we should expect to continue to see that we really shouldn't, unless he aggravates a new injury or I'm sorry, aggravates the knee or has a new injury? This isn't something we need to be concerned with moving forward.
No, in fact, Calvin Johnson hasn't practiced a Wednesday in 2 years. You know, he always gets that Veterans Day rest. If he's even the slightest bit nicked up, he's going to get the benefit of the doubt from the coaching staff and the training staff. They're going to let him rest. Calvin Johnson is not a guy that needs practice reps to get it.
Right.
It's just a matter of whether he is physically healthy enough to do it. So any rest you see from Calvin, until you see questionable or out next to his name, there's not really any reason to be concerned.
Corey Hilliard is going to go ahead and be, he had full participation as listed as probable, but one that does give you a little pause is Adonijé, who's we signed specifically for depth and rotation on that defensive line, keep fresh legs in there, is listed as questionable. So if he doesn't go, who needs to step up? Is this another game where Willie Young is going to be the featured starter? Do we have anybody else that's going to be ready to go?
I think you're going to see Willie Young. You're definitely going to have to see better play out of Devin Taylor. He was very disappointing on the field last week. You know, we got a lot of these guys on the defensive line. We specifically built it to be a high rotation defense, and everybody's got to fill their role. If they're getting however many it is, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 snaps on defense a game, well, then they need to step up to the plate and take that role. And we need effective defensive line. Defensive line as a whole throughout the year has been a weak point. It really hasn't been Sue and Fairley.
Right.
Sue and Fairley have really done their job in the middle, and you're not supposed to get the majority of your sack numbers and quarterback pressure from the defensive tackles. Typically, how you see defensive tackles get pressure right up the middle is when your effective defensive ends are double-teamed. You saw this years ago with, like, Pierre Paul or Justin Tuck and Strahan on the outside for the Giants, and that allowed guys lesser-known names in the middle that could make a push in the middle.
Right, we've seen guys like J.J. Watt really step up on the edge and things like that.
Right, so if you have super effective defensive ends, then it opens things up in the middle. But the number one protection for any defensive coordinator is what's right in front of my quarterback. I can't let anything get through that. And then I have to have enough, whether it's with tight ends, whether it's with running backs doing chip blocks, to limit the outside pressure as well. And then you got to have your quarterback stepping up in the pocket to deliver the football. And this all has to happen in less than 3 seconds.
Right.
So the Lions have done exceptionally well at the defensive tackle spot. You know, now Fairley has been a little bit more up and down. Sue's been, this is the most consistent year he's ever had as a Lion in the NFL. And, you know, Fairley has played well for the most part, but where we've really been lacking is defensive end. We have not had any consistency at that end, and that's why we don't generate the pass rush.
Right, we've seen some great play. Like you said, Fairley has kind of been on that up and down. We've seen a couple of spectacular plays out of him, but we've also seen, you know, kind of some lackluster pass rush as well. And we've seen guys like Willie Young be great, but we're not seeing it consistently across the table week to week to week.
Now, the D tackles, you can see it. I can prove that they're playing exceptionally well, and that's because of our run defense numbers. And that's basically attributed to defensive tackles and the amount of bodies that they command in the middle, which is allowing our defensive ends, and more specifically the linebackers, to be able to fill the gaps further up on the outside. But the D tackles are not letting anybody get through, not on a consistent basis, and our rushing defensive numbers reflect that.
Right, we're going to be taking on Bobby Rainey this week, who came off an exceptional game.
Buccaneers have been going through a lot of injuries at their running back position. Of course, they have their megastar, Doug Martin, who went to the IR with a torn labrum. Then they decided to fill in for about a month or so with Mike James, who ran the ball relatively effectively. And now he's done, and he's out for the year. So it was next man up again, and Bobby Rainey and Brian Leonard. Rainey's the more prototypical low power runner with a good center of gravity, good balance guy, pretty explosive actually. Cleveland cut him this year. They just didn't have room for him on the roster, evidently, after the Willis McGahee signing.
Right.
And they're running McGahee and Obanaya up in Cleveland. But Bobby Rainey was the odd man out. Tampa Bay picks him up, and they benefited from it.
Yeah, the Lions' defensive rushing yards per game were actually ranking fifth, so that's gone up.
Right.
We're fifth in the NFL, only allowing 94.6 yards per game, which is that's the best you've seen out of the Lions since...
As long as I can remember.
In a long, long time. Well, before we get really heavy into this tape, we've kind of strayed off a little bit. I do want to cover a few more of the injuries. There's a couple more that are a little concerning. We talked on, you know, Calvin Hilliard, Adonijay, those guys. Pettigrew mm-hmm. is likely to play, Bentley and those guys. The one that concerns me is Glover Quinn. He didn't participate all week. He was limited on Friday, and he's questionable to go. Do you think Quinn makes it into the game? Do you think he's on a limited snap count?
It's hard to say until we see it on Sunday what that's going to be, but stronger play from the secondary is going to be vital. Antonio Brown, rather, he lit us up, 147 yards, couple of touchdowns. And a lot of that was directly attributed to safety play. I know one of them specifically was Lewis Delmas on a jam play in the middle. And Brown got free on an inside slant and just took it to the house. There was another one, I believe it was Slay and Quinn, actually, that they just let him go.
Right.
Two missed tackles after a relatively routine play.
Well, last week was kind of a fluke, though. I mean, that was literally the worst secondary performance we've seen. I mean, everyone looked bad. Houston looked atrocious, worse than I've ever seen Chris Houston play, and that's a statement right there. Rasheed Mathis looked completely lost, and again, you saw guys like Jontay Green and other people, Darius Slade. We saw these guys rotate through various positions, but it just didn't matter. Whatever they were getting thrown at, they were nowhere close. It was really, really bad.
Well, as bad as the Buccaneers are, it doesn't get any easier this week. Vincent Jackson comes to town,
and Glennon has been playing better. That kid finally has a little bit. He's had some time. He's, you know, been the starter for a few weeks now. He's getting the opportunity to throw. I mean, he's still a rookie, and hopefully we can find ways to take advantage of that. But ultimately, he's gaining traction.
He's just bullish enough to take some chances against a vulnerable secondary.
Why not?
Exactly. They got nothing to lose. They're 2-8. And the Lions secondary has proven they can't stop anybody.
This could really be a coming out party for Glennon, because, like you said, I mean, if you're daring and you know you're going up against a vulnerable team, if you're 2-8, what does it matter if you throw three picks? You might throw three touchdowns.
Exactly.
So, the one other guy that I did want to get into is Lewis Delmas as well. He was limited participation all week until Friday, where he actually did not participate. Do you think this is veteran rest as well, considering the probable status placed on him?
More than likely, it's a little concerning that he didn't do anything on Friday. You know,
no,
I'm not.
He was limited. I'm sorry. You're right. Limited participation all week. Did not participate on Friday.
Yeah, I'd be. You know, I'm not at the facility. I'm not there to see. Did he get on a bike? You know, how'd he look? Did he just get nicked up? Did he have a setback during the week? I don't really know. That's gonna be one of those game time type of things too. But if he's probable, I'd say more than likely, he's gonna be okay. And it was a matter of rest.
Okay, well, I want to really dig into... that wraps it up pretty much for the Lions injuries and the Lions news. We've touched on it briefly, but let's dig into this Tampa Bay game. We're hosting, like we said, and so what's the game plan? What are we doing?
Well, we need a bounce back, for sure. I mean, the Lions they've won every game coming off of a loss so far this year.
Right. We only have a losing streak of one.
Sure.
It's not overly concerning, but I'm still, quite frankly, I'm still scared of the letdown.
I mean, you have to be somewhat scared of it. I mean, this team's resiliency is really being called into question, because they had a clear path to take a good lead, or at least, you know, shore up their playoff chances more definitively with a win against Pittsburgh, and they failed to do so. I get it that it was on the road, but it was an inferior opponent, and you let that one get away.
With some poor play calling.
Right. And just poor play in general. Poor secondary. We've already covered all that. But they really let that one get away, and that was one that shouldn't have happened. Now it's time to bounce back. It's the 2-8 Buccaneers, and you need to put those questions about your resiliency to rest.
Well, one thing that really concerns me is diverting attention away from Calvin Johnson. I mean, considering the fact that he's averaging just over 49 yards in the second half of games compared to just shy of 71 in the first half. I mean, like you said, we've covered all the staffs. I mean, Stafford was 3 for 16 for 35 in the final two quarters of that last game. We need to come out with a different game plan. I mean, Stafford's only explanation for that was we didn't execute. They came out and showed us a two-man coverage. So what? You got to make your adjustments. I mean, I guess that's my big concern is, okay, if the other team comes out and has made those adjustments, are we able to do it on the fly? Because so far, they haven't shown that they're capable of that.
To continue to win, for the Lions to continue to win, you have to keep going to Johnson. I don't care who's covering him. I don't care if it's two bodies, three, or if it's the best corner in the league, like it will be this week with Darrell Revis. I don't really care who's covering Johnson. Johnson is the best receiver in football for a reason. He can out-jump, he can out-muscle, he can out-position, and he can just out-catch anybody on the field. This guy is on his way to a Hall of Fame career. So treat him as such. Keep feeding him the ball. And then your other guys have got to step up. You've banged on this point numerous times. You have to have another option beyond Calvin.
Right.
You can force-feed Calvin all you want, and that's fine. I'm never going to blame him for throwing to Calvin Johnson. But when you do deliver the ball to somebody else, be it Ross, be it Fourier, be it Pettigrew, Burleson in this case.
Ogletree, anybody.
You know,
Durham.
Or Durham.
Or Fourier.
You have to make the play when it's your turn to make the play.
Right. You have to have guys out on the field that can execute, that know the routes, that are in the right places. Stafford has to make those throws. And guys need to reel him in. We've seen way too many drops this season.
Absolutely. There, far too many. It's so frustrating to watch because if a certain percentage of your offense is going to be Calvin Johnson, and it should be, it's Calvin, then what? When you get your opportunity to contribute on offense, and if you're a guy like Ross who's going to get thrown at three times, if it hits you in a spot where you should be able to catch the football, if you were open, you got it right in your chest, make the catch. If that's all your contribution is, so be it. You're helping the Lions win.
Right.
That's what your role is on this team. So you have to at least be able to do that.
I agree. The one thing, I mean, I don't want to refer back to the Steelers game too much, but that second half, the Lions were held, not runs, not passes, total yardage, 72 yards in the second half.
Right.
You can't have those kind of numbers coming forward going against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and expect to win.
You saw some breakdown in the offensive line in the second half. I mean, Stafford was under more duress in the second half. They changed the coverage scheme, but the Lions just didn't seem like they knew at all how to react to that. Coming into this game, there's a couple of big playmakers on the Tampa Bay side. Gerald McCoy has 6 sacks on the year, and Lavonte David has 5. So we can't afford for the offensive line to have any setbacks and regress back to what they've been in years past. They've got to continue to hold the line and continue to give Stafford the time to do his job.
Well, we have seen some guys really step up. Warford has looked solid. Reef has looked solid. You know, Raiola continues to anchor the line sufficiently. I know a lot of people have questions about him, but, I mean, he's really only going to be with the team one or two more years. Although you really do start to question, well, at some point, when do you make those hard decisions? Because you only have these caliber rosters for so many years, and then your shot goes away. And then
they're on a window. They're on a window for sure.
And then you're back to rebuilding again. So,
you know, and I'm not saying that the offensive line has been awful by any means. They haven't. They played exceptionally well. What I'm saying is for a key to this football game is that the Lions offensive line has to continue to play well. They can't have a setback.
Moving forward with some of the offensive scheme that we're hoping to see, how effective do you think this run game can be against a fairly stiff Tampa Bay defensive line? I know they're ninth in the NFL against the rush, averaging just over 101.4 yards per game. But with Bush on a bounce-back game, really trying to prove himself, and with Bell, who is, you know, I mean, he's a competitor, so obviously he'd love to start over Bush if he could. Not that he doesn't want to see Bush succeed for the sake of the team, but Bell has looked exceptional, and Do we think that he sees a heavier workload? Do we still think that Bush is going to be the feature guy regardless?
I think it's a case of the hotter hand. I think they're both going to see their carries the way that you normally would. I think Bush will start. But you'll see how it kind of plays out. Now, with the Buccaneers having a pretty decent run defense, I think the Lions are going to go to the air early and often, especially since they've lost starting safety Deshaun Goldson to suspension. That's just another piece of vulnerability. in the Buccaneers secondary, which isn't strong outside of Revis anyway. I think the Lions are going to put the ball in the air a lot. And, you know, that plays into Reggie Bush's hands a little bit more.
Well, considering he's still the second leading receiver on the team. Right. One thing I will say about that, though, is that I think that the screen or the check down is more effective with Bell on the field. Not because he's any more capable than Reggie Bush, but I think they expect it more with Reggie Bush, considering the role that Joique Bell has played when he's come in for those snaps.
I would agree with that as long as it is properly executed and timed. There was one from Joique Bell last week that was beautiful. It was a great run action fake, and then into the screen after that. It was beautifully timed. It was a really nice ball from Stafford. And it turned out to be a big play, but there was that level of surprise element to the play that made it more effective. I agree.
Right. I mean, ultimately that kind of rings true for anybody, though, because you've got to have the right time, you've got to have the right throw, because we've seen Bush overthrown on short screens and things like that. So it needs to be effective play calling regardless. Do you think Jim Schwartz comes out and is as aggressive in case it comes down to one of those important game time decisions, kind of like what we saw in the Steelers game?
I don't think there's a chance of that happening.
Schwartz
takes the points this time.
I think you're probably right, unless he's legitimately stubborn enough to say, I'm going to do this again. I'm not saying he's going to fake a punt or fake a field goal, but I would not be surprised if Jim Schwartz comes out and makes another controversial call. Maybe it goes in his favor and we're calling him a genius. Maybe not. But here's my argument, is if they go up 11 points and they score on that fake field goal and they get the touchdown, I still don't like the call. And we talked about this last week. But I guess, you know, I bring up the point again just simply because when you're discussing Jim Schwartz, it's important to remember things like that. It's important to remember the play calls that were made on the field, because then you're directly talking about the intelligence of the scheme that's being put into place and the plays that are being called on the field. And I think that's still a concern for this team, especially when they're in a high-pressure situation and a must-win game.
Well, the Lions have to find the right motivation not to play down to the level of their opponent again. I mean, they're facing an inferior opponent, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 2-8. They're at home, back in front of the home fans. Like I said, they're playing four of their next five at Ford Field. This is the chance to clinch it all. And, you know, they're a six-win team right now. They win, you know, these four games at home coming up, and they're to a double-digit win team. And they have a great look at the playoffs. I don't think that Schwartz is dumb enough to really bring that into question and jeopardize that. He may go for a fourth down play.
I'm fine with that.
You know, that's fine. That's a different level of aggression. But I think when he's faced with a decision for sure points versus a risk for more points, perhaps, or none, I think he takes the points.
If you're on their side of the 50, especially if you're on their side of the 40, I love fourth down play calls. I love them because statistics dictate that it's in your favor to go for it more times than not. And if you don't make it, you're already on that side of the field. So what are you giving up, a net 20 yards on a punt anyway? Because likely if you're not coffin cornering it and they get any amount of return, you're not getting a huge net when you're on that side of the field.
Or it's a touchback anyway.
Exactly. I love the fourth down play call. I love that style of aggression. I do not agree with bonehead decisions that jeopardize when you're talking about clinching with 12 minutes to go in the fourth.
Sure. But
that's another pod, literally.
Right.
Some of the important things that we did want to talk about, though, Revis defended two passes intended for Johnson, and he held him to one catch for 13 yards in their last matchup. That's actually their only previous matchup. Now, given this was back in November of 2010 when Revis was still with the Jets. Now, important to note, Revis was younger and healthier. But what's your take on the matchup? How do you think that they line up?
I think Revis has clearly, after his ACL surgery, is not the player that he was. He's still good. He's a very good instinctual player. He's still an athlete. He knows how to play the position. But nobody stops Calvin Johnson. Nobody. He's in the prime of his career, you know, and you know, the only time that Calvin's been limited this year was when he was battling that knee early, and we just never heard how severe it was. But now that he's healthy enough to be Calvin again, no one stopped him.
Well, the only thing that hurts Calvin Johnson is the play call and the throwing that goes into it that affects him, because they took shots at Calvin three times in the second half last week and couldn't connect on any of them.
However, that offensive line for Detroit was not allowing the same amount of time for for Matt Stafford. He was under more duress. The throws were not as accurate. It was back foot stuff. It was rolling. That's not Stafford's game.
That's not his prototypical performance.
Right. He can make those plays, but that's not where he really excels. You know, it'd be interesting to see the statistics of him on the scramble or outside the pocket, his completion numbers, touchdowns, interceptions. I bet they're pretty average. But when he can step up and deliver football in the pocket, he's pretty darn good. You know, he'll miss some. He's got a little bit of a wild arm on him, but most of the time, if he's making a good fundamental throw and Calvin Johnson is even in the vicinity of it, he's going to get a play on that ball. Revis doesn't scare me. He really doesn't.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the rushing attack that the Buccaneers present. We did touch on it earlier, but just to, you know, give you guys an update on that, I mean, Rainey went for 163 yards, three TDs against Atlanta. The Buccaneers, I mean, this is their... they've run for at least 140 yards in three straight games. That's the first time that's happened since 2005. I know it's a stiff defense considering what the Detroit Lions are presenting up front, but do you think... I mean, this guy's a pounder. He's a bruiser. He's 5'8". He's over 200... I think he's 212, 215.
Now, bear in mind that last week in Bobby Rainey's real coming-out party, they played the Atlanta Falcons, who are awful, and their season's over. He also had 30 carries last week.
Right. Well, just to give you an idea, though, he did have, 8 or 9 carries against Miami for 45 yards and a score, so not a bad performance there either.
I'm not saying that he's not going to be completely ineffective.
And that was his first week with the team.
Sure, I think he'll be fine, but he's not getting 30 carries against the Lions, and the Buccaneers expect to win that football game. The Falcons can't play.
Right.
They're awful. The Lions at least are going to be able to put up some points. That's just going to happen. There's no way Bobby Rainey runs the football 30 times and the Buccaneers win this football game. Not a chance. And Brian Leonard is the pass-catching guy. He'll be in there to spell relief for Bobby Rainey a little bit. I'm far more concerned about Mike Glennon than I am about Bobby Rainey.
And the Vincent Jackson connection.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Glennon is just young enough, just cocky enough not to really care or be intimidated.
And strong-armed enough, too.
And that's dangerous. I mean, he's a third-year guy. He was waiting for Freeman to fall on his face. He got his opportunity, and he seized it. I mean, his best game to date was against Atlanta last week. 20 for 23, 231 yards, two touchdowns.
So
not high volume, but that's accuracy. 20 of 23... That's a kid that's not afraid to make the throw.
Right.
And that's scary against the Lions.
And he's got more options currently than the Lions really have that really present a threat.
Yeah, I mean, Vincent Jackson goes without saying, but even Timothy Wright at tight end has emerged. So they got pretty good pass-catching running backs. I mean, there's for a 2-8 team, this is what we talked about in weeks prior. The separation between the 8-2 team and the 2-8 is microscopic. It's the little things. It's how you prepped in practice or your coaching staff or your personalities in the locker room. It's just there's such a finite difference between good and bad in the NFL that anybody can beat anybody.
All right, so I did want to talk a little bit about DeAndre Levy, who's really been that shining star in a somewhat solid defense, but really we've seen a lot of holes. So
Levy has been a guy that has stepped up more so than any other Lion this year that wasn't expected to. Levy was expected to contribute, but he wasn't expected to be a star. And he's one of the dynamic playmakers that we've got on the Lions' defensive side of the ball and in the linebacking core. DeAndre Levy leads the league in interceptions. He's got 5 on the year.
Could have been 6 after last week.
That's by no coincidence. The guy is finding ways to get to the football and finding ways to make tackles, make plays, just be involved, and he's having the best year of his career as a Lion. No doubt about it.
Right, that does bring up an interesting point, too, and it just reminded me of something. Calvin is leading the league in touchdowns, touchdown receptions, and in yardage. So, clearly we have playmakers on the offensive and defensive side of the ball. We just really need to find a way to bring that all together.
The team's got enough. We've said it over and over and over. They have enough talent on the team to win in the National Football League. They're on that level with anybody else. It's just a convergence of all those little things. We say it over and over and over. It's your attitude, it's your approach, it's your preparation, it's play calling, it's scheming, it's how everything has to come together at the same time. And that's what puts you over the edge.
Right. We certainly have the personnel, and we definitely clearly have the schedule moving forward to pull it all together.
Yep.
And speaking of that, let's get into the standings and give you an updated playoff picture. We really would have loved to see 7-3 and defining us as the number one guys in the NFC North, but we see, again, a tie atop the NFC North with the Detroit Lions and the Chicago Bears both being 6-4.
Only thing saving us right now is the tiebreaker that we hold against the Bears for beating them twice. But we're going to see on Thanksgiving, we've already lost to the Packers, and we don't want the Packers to hang around, wait for Rodgers to get back, and especially if they were to get us on Thanksgiving, and we got two losses to the Packers. So this is the time to separate in the North. And, you know, we just got to hope we get a little help from the Bears. But more importantly than anything, the Lions control their own destiny. If they win and they continue to win, they will make the playoffs. They just have to decide that that's what they want to do.
Right. We saw that the Saints had another win. The Panthers are up to 7-3 now.
Right.
So, I mean, it looks like the Saints are going to continue to move along and clinch the South.
Mm-hmm.
But the Panthers are clearly viable wild card.
No doubt about it.
I mean, they're definitely going to be in contention. The East has been as controversial as possible, really. Eagles, Cowboys, and Giants, I would still say, I mean, we were talking about this a couple of weeks back, that the Cowboys, in our mind, they had sealed it, because they were looking good, they were ahead of the East.
Every other team in the East was terrible.
At the time.
Right. But, I mean, you can't sleep on the East, and that's just how much things change in the NFL from week to week. Now the East is right back in the mix.
Yeah, the Eagles are actually leading the division at 6-5, and the Cowboys have fallen back to 5-5. And you got the Giants, who've had a four-game win streak at 4-6, and we've seen them year after year get hot at the right time.
You know, how bad were the Eagles, and they're a half game back of the Lions overall?
Right. Seattle comes through with another victory, 10-1. I told you, you can't call any team that was a 900 shaky.
That's true.
But San Fran starting to fall back, and the Arizona Cardinals are really slipping their way up in that division, both at 6-4 behind the Seahawks in the West.
Which tells you how costly was that loss to the freaking Cardinals.
Absolutely.
What if we got into a situation where we're a wild card team and we get beaten out by Arizona because of a head-to-head loss?
Not to mention the fact that we'd still be ahead, clearly number one of the division, because we'd be at 7-3 without that loss, even if we had dropped the Steelers.
That's why every game counts. You can't overlook any opponent. Everyone in the NFL means something, even that early in the year.
Right. So, I mean, it's anyone's game. You know, I mean, we've done this with little success projecting, and we've seen it change time and time again. Bottom line is, I think we're just going to see this one come down to the end, with the exception of teams like the Saints and the Seahawks, who are clearly only a couple of games away from clinching in their division. But everyone else is up there. I mean, the North is still a huge race. The East is a race, and those wild card spots are going to be fiercely contended.
You know, and the Lions are one of those teams. I thought I read a stat earlier today, like 19 teams in the NFL are within a game and a half of a playoff spot right now.
Wow.
And it's week 12. It's a close race, folks, and the Lions have got to do their part and step up and take it. 4 of 5 the next few games at home. It's time to win, and win now.
Well, I think that wraps it up for us. That covers the game and the standings and gives you a good outlook of what we're hoping to see in this upcoming week. So thanks for joining us on the Lions Pride Podcast. And we appreciate your support. Email the show at lionsprideshow@gmail.com. Send us your comments and your thoughts. Let us know how we're doing. We want to hear your input, your analysis. We'd love to read your comments on the show. You can find us on iTunes by searching Lions Pride Podcast or direct at lionsprideshow.podomatic.com. And we'll be back with your Week 12 recap, hopefully following a win against Tampa Bay. Go Lions.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you later.